Live at the Dive with WDIR, Windsor Detroit Internet Radio. It's local, cross-border, and worldwide online, WDIR.net. It's Windsor Detroit Internet Radio, Live at the Dive.
The opinions and views in the following program are those of the hosts and their guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of WDIR. WDIR.net, Windsor Detroit Internet Radio, local, cross-border, and worldwide.
It's that time. Wake up, Windsor. Wake up, Detroit. It's time for Big JD and Lippo in the morning. And here they are, your hosts, Big JD and Lippo.
That's right. You're listening to Big JD and Lippo in the morning. I'm Big JD.
And I'm Lippo. How are you doing today, Big JD?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Great on this beautiful Wednesday morning at the local dive.
I thought it was Tony the Tiger for a second.
Great. Actually, they're great.
Sounds pretty good. Did you like that cereal? What was that called? Oh, Frosted Flakes.
Frosted Flakes. Who doesn't like Frosted Flakes? It's sugar on top of corn.
Yeah, but would you put sugar actually on like corn on the cob or anything like that?
Not corn on the cob. No. You have to smush the corn down, mix it with some other chemicals, and then bake it, and then put the sugar on it.
Yeah. Okay. Why are so many different cereals actually made of corn?
Well, it's one of those things that we have in the world, like soybeans and wheat.
It's plentiful.
It's easy to grow and it's cheap, exactly, and we know how to mass produce it and turn it into whatever. Soy is another big thing that they make. Almost, you can make almost anything. You make car fuel out of it, or you can make margarine out of it. With corn, you can make Frosted Flakes, or you know what's also as good is corn flakes.
Well, yeah, corn flakes, but that's the Frosted Flakes with no sugar on it.
Basically, yes. And I really liked cornflakes without sugar. Like, you just put the milk and the corn. I don't know what there was some kind of magic that happened when you did that. Same with Rice Krispies. Rice is another one of those plentiful resources, or what do you call them? Staples, I guess.
Rice.
Rice, yeah, I know. I'm just saying that rice is another one of those types of things.
Right, sure, yeah.
Was there another cereal that was made from rice? Sugar Crisp, wasn't that rice? Puffed rice.
Yeah, puffed wheat, that was.
And straight from the newsroom floor and the walls and the ceiling, it's time for news from around the world and sometimes out of this world from Big JD and Lippo. Let's head over to the newsroom.
And here we are in the WDIR newsroom.
This is next to the kitchen at the local dive, right? So people have an idea. We smell the French fries cooking and the lasagna being baked. Mmm, that lasagna is so good.
Oh, yeah. Lasagna bites.
Lasagna bites. More deep fried goodness.
Mm-hmm. As tasty as Frosted Flakes.
Is that the slogan for that?
No, it's not. But that's
lasagna your bites.
As just tasty as Frosted Flakes, yeah.
Yeah. Sorry for stepping on you there.
That's okay. What do you got? Well, I can't see your toes, so... We can't see each other's toes, so we're stepping all over everything.
I know. Sorry. I got to do something about this gut of mine. But U.S. discount giant Target is set to open its doors to customers in Canada for the first time, starting tomorrow in three communities west of Toronto. One's going to be in Guelph. One's going to be in Fergus. Have you ever been to Fergus?
I sure have not.
No?
No.
Oh, okay. And Milton. I'm really surprised about the Fergus store, because Fergus is like one of those, it's one of those towns where they have lots of artisans and craft places, and you can buy candles there, you can buy antique furniture.
You can buy candles in Fergus.
Yes. Wow. Yeah, it's right down the road, seriously, from Alora, which we used to go there on a yearly basis. Like, you know, go there on a regular basis because that's where you get the Alora Gorge, which is where the Grand River goes through. You camp on the riverside, and during the day you get on your tube and you float down the river.
Nice.
Yeah, it's a ton of fun. But yeah, so Fergus is like a little town, but I suppose enough people go there. I mean, obviously they did their research, right? But as far as the Windsor store, which is going to be at the Devonshire Mall, that store can be maybe open as early as next week. The fast track openings come as a surprise because Target has publicly said its first 24 Canadian stores, all in Ontario, would open near the end of March, though the details have been kept secret. Target's like a big apple. We've never publicly said this is our grand opening date because we wanted to be flexible. And obviously, you know, that's for obvious reasons because you never know how these things pan out, right? As far as setting up a store.
I'll tell you how it all pans out.
Tell me.
Target here will be useless.
It'll be useless over here?
That's what I think. Everybody might flock to it because it's an American thing, you know what I mean? But as soon as you find out that you can't get half of the stuff that they have at the American stores probably, nor are you going to get for the same price, then it'll all be shot down.
Like you Zellers. Are Mr. Negativity. Holy moly. Where are you getting all this, insight from?
Experience.
Is there an American store over here an American-owned company over here that is totally a disappointment compared to its American counterpart?
Disappointing, you say?
Yeah.
Well, we don't really have anything from, you know what I mean? We have some things that were started in the U.S., like McDonald's.
Well, I'm thinking retail experience, like Sears, The Gap, you know, just stores like that you would
they're
find
okay,
out.
Okay, I guess, but I'm going to still say that they're better in the U.S.,
Everything's better in the U.S., right?
It is.
Big JD and I had the fun time of being able to go there yesterday, in fact.
That's right.
And as we were driving around, Big JD said, only in America can we have this much fun.
And it's true. Especially for all the places. Where are you going to go to Apple Store here? How far are you going to have to travel?
Right. London.
2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
When it takes 10, 15 minutes to get to Apple Store, just crossing over the border.
Okay, you're a bit of an exaggerator, but yeah.
Where are you going to find Mrs. Fields over here?
Mrs. Fields? Well, she lives right next door.
Well, you can go to Costco or wherever and buy little packages.
Oh, there's Mrs. Fields in her backyard.
Yeah.
Hey, Mrs. Fields, Jeff wants to talk to you.
Make me some cookies.
He would like some sugar cookies, please. And make me some double chocolate fudge brownies, please.
And you're listening to Big JD and Lipo in the Morning on WDIR, Windsor, Detroit, Internet Radio, local, cross-border, and worldwide. What's the topic of the show today, Lipo?
We're going to be talking about phones and phones and phones.
Wow.
Telephones. Mostly, we're going to talk about like the fun history of telephones and how we got from... we used to have an opening that said string and cans when we used to have our tech talk, right?
I believe so, yeah. And that was the... That was the Jabbercast.
Inside the Jabbercast, even the Big JD and Lipo show.
Oh, that's right. We did have that still.
At CJAM.
Yeah.
CJAM. That would be CJAM.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we'd have the thing and it would actually say string cans. But believe it or not, that is one of the first types of communication devices that people use over distances that were too long for just the spoken word for people to actually hear you. That was one of the very first devices. And it wasn't necessarily a can and string.
Can use string and can as a source of telephone-ness.
Do you remember the longest length of string and can you ever did when you were a kid?
No, I don't really remember the longest length, no.
We went across the street one time in our neighborhood in Detroit, I remember. And... we'd have to have one kid watching for cars and all the other person was in their front yard and the other guy was in his front yard.
Very nice. That was some length of string right there.
Oh yeah, everybody flew kites back in those days too. I don't even know. Do kids know what kites are these days?
We'll tell them when we come back.
Hey, this is Jeff Burrows from the Tea Party and Crash Karma. You're listening to WDIR, kicking you in the face.
Result Makers is an elite recruiting and consulting team connecting professionals to the top performing businesses. Located in Troy, Michigan, call 248-251-0143 or visit resultmakers.net. That's resultmakers.net. Scentsy is your safe, wickless alternative to scented candles. Call independent Scentsy director Kathy Kasborowitz at 519-733-6199 or check out the Scentsy banner ad at WDIR.net for Kathy's website. Wickless scented candles. Scentsy makes perfect sense.
ShawnToon.com is ready to take on your next 2D animation project. Sean Watkins is a professional Flash animator and graphic artist. Check out his work online at ShawnToon.com, ShawnToon.com.
If you're in need of professional video and film production or audio production, check out OMS Entertainment. Corporate, commercial, training, broadcast, podcast, real estate, or wedding. Located in Windsor, Ontario, visit OMSEntertainment.com.
Local, cross-border, and worldwide, and now live at the Local Dive. It's the home of Dive Radio, and it's WDIR, Windsor Detroit Internet Radio, online at WDIR.net.
And we're back. You're listening to Big JD and Limpo in the Morning on WDIR, Windsor Detroit Internet Radio, local, cross-border, and worldwide. And we are talking about telephones today, but we left off at kites. Do kids know what kites are today? And I'm not sure that they do.
It's been a long time since I've seen kites in the sky, that's for sure.
Yeah, you're not very often that you see those anymore.
The windy spring day back in, well, in Dulver, too. Well, when I lived in Detroit as well, too, we used to go out to Derby Hill, and everybody had their kite out there. And there would actually be an issue with your kite is getting tangled in my kite because it's too close.
My kite?
No, that's what you would tell the kid. Make sure your kite don't get caught in my kite. Meanwhile, you had like 200 feet of string up in the sky, and it's like as if you're going to be able to control the end of that and not get it caught in somebody else's kite. But those were the days.
I was going to say, Mom, my kite's tied up with some kid from Detroit's kite. Imagine that, over the river.
Over the river. That'd be amazing. And then, of course, there was the telephone lines you had to watch out for. Stay away from the telephone lines. You don't want your kite getting caught up in the telephone lines.
Oh, I thought you meant your telephone line, your string and can line that ran across the street.
Well, that was where we got the string from. We would use everybody had kite string. You had a big roll of string in the drawer that you saved up till the spring, because spring is kite season. So during the summer, when it's not kite season, wind is low, that's when you got out the cans and you'd use your string from your kites and you'd talk across the street with the cans. But there was other implementations of that too that weren't just cans and string. It's like centuries old, this technology, where you had a diaphragm on one end that was tied to some kind of taut string, not necessarily string, but it could be anything, reed of some kind, hemp or whatever, and people were able to talk over long periods of distance without actually having to go up to them and speak to them. Which reminds me of, have you ever been to Chichen Itza?
No. Where is that restaurant?
That's on the corner of
Wabash
and Chevain. No, Chichen Itza is about a three-hour drive outside of Cancun, Mexico.
Okay.
And there is a playing field there where they used to play this game where it was like basketball, basically, but the losing team, the captain, would get his head chopped off. But that's besides the point.
Oh, nice.
Inside of this area where they played, there was two walls made of stone, and the judges would be on either end of this field. It'd be like a football field, about that length, about 100 yards away from each other. And you can talk less loud as I'm talking. You can talk just at a regular voice, just like this. And the person at the other end would be able to hear you because there was also stone behind you. It was engineered in such a way that the people at the other end could hear you. It's a freaky thing. You see the person's lips moving and you can actually hear them. But it doesn't feel like it's actually coming from the front of you. It just seems like it's in your head. It's an incredible sensation to go there and listen to somebody talking 100 yards away from you, and they're just talking at this level of volume. And it just makes me wonder, like, did humans actually engineer the surroundings of that field to make that like that? Or did they have some kind of help in that regard?
Extraterrestrials.
something like that. That's all I can think of. It's like, how did they figure out, and how come we're not using that technology now? How come we're not being able to, you know, talk to people at the other end of football fields or whatever? There's got to be some use for that crazy technology. Or we had walkie-talkies now, right? Which is another, what do you call that? Another step forward towards telephones, even though I think telephones were probably in use before walkie-talkies. Walkie-talkies came around in, what, the war, I have to think. That was the way they communicated with each other, was a walkie-talkie
transmission of some other kind.
Right.
The telephone itself first patented in 1876 by Alexander Graham Bell. And wasn't he the guy with the kite?
No, it was Thomas Edison.
No, it wasn't Thomas Edison either. It was
Benjamin Franklin.
Benjamin Franklin, right. Speaking of kites, and further developed by many others, the telephone was the first device in human history that enabled people to talk directly with each other across large distances. And it rapidly became indispensable to businesses, government, households, and it now is among the most widely used appliance in the developed world. And that, of course, comes to us from Wikipedia, so you know it's gospel.
What do you think of the wiki?
I think it's awesome.
I think at the beginning the wiki was it was questionable.
Wiki was wacky.
Yeah, because too many people, it wasn't reined in enough. But now I think it may be just a little bit too reined in. I'm not sure. It's hard to say. But you can pretty much guarantee that 90% of the stuff you read on the wiki is true. I give it a lot of weight as far as that goes.
Yeah, I think it's more a little more highly regarded now, and I think probably the most widely used information source on the web, I would have to say, as
By
far
who?
As getting information quickly on any subject, and it also popping up as the first thing generally in a search. So it's the easiest way to find out any information, really.
Yeah, I have to agree with you.
So
there.
Yeah, you want to check other sources in most cases, but we can assume that the telephone was first patented in 1876 by Alexander Graham Bell.
Pretty much. Now, wasn't he he's a Canadian guy, though, right?
Alex?
Yeah. Alexander Graham Bell is a Canadian guy, and they name, he's from the same place that Wayne Gretzky's from.
No, he was born in Edinburgh.
Was he?
Scotland, yeah.
You probably got
that. He died in Nova Scotia.
Oh, so he probably lived in Canada then, right? Obviously.
Well,
if he died there.
I don't know if he... Yeah, he might have been... Yeah, well, I guess you can't get shipped here when you're dead either, but...
No, he probably was saying, "Hey, Martha, I think I'm going to die. Bring me to Canada." No, he probably didn't say that. But it's just... I know that there is streets named after him in... Where's Wayne Gretzky from? It's slipping my brain. Burlington? Is that where it is?
I don't know.
Somewhere near Niagara Falls there. Not sure, but anyway. So I think he had something to do with working in Canada, but
I can tell you about him in Canada. In 1870, at age 23, Bell, his brother's widow, Carolyn, and his parents traveled on the SS Nestorian to Canada. After landing in Quebec City, the Bells boarded a train to Montreal and later to Paris, Ontario.
Paris?
Yep, to stay with the Reverend Thomas Henderson, a family friend. And after a brief stay with the Hendersons, the Bell family purchased a farm of 10.5 acres at Tutelo Heights, now called Tutelo Heights. that's right from, it was Tutelo, and now it's called Tutelo Heights. Near Brantford.
Brantford, that's the city.
Yeah. And the property consisted of an orchard, large farmhouse, stable, pigsty, hen house, and a carriage house, which bordered the Grand River. So that's where he kind of, he set up a shop, I guess, there, and his own workshop in the converted carriage house, and near to what he called his dreaming place, apparently, a large hollow nestled in trees at the back of the property above the river. And despite his frail condition, upon arriving in Canada, Bell found the climate and environs to his liking and rapidly improved. And he continued his interest in the study of human voice. And when he discovered the Six Nations Reserve across the river at Onondaga? Is that the... That's not the Speedway place, is it?
Talladega?
Oh, yeah. Talladega Nights. He learned the Mohawk language. I know that. I know the Mohawk language. And translated its unwritten vocabulary into visible speech symbols. And for his work, Bell was awarded the title of honorary chief and participated in a ceremony where he donned a Mohawk headdress, and danced traditional dances. So
that's how he started his... the phone came from an invention that he was using to try to help deaf people here, correct?
Yeah, and invented in Canada, obviously, because they came here in 1870, and it was... He made that in 1876.
Right.
I believe, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Great things happen in Canada. Next thing you know, we got BlackBerries.
Yeah, nice.
They're not related at all?
What, the BlackBerry and him?
Yes.
Rim.
Next
they might be related to Jobs.
No, there's no more Rim. You know that, right?
Yeah, what are they doing now? Because they just came out with a new thing, though.
No, the company Research in Motion?
Yeah.
It doesn't exist anymore.
So what are they calling themselves?
BlackBerry.
Nice. That'll only last so long, and they'll be gonzo.
Double Live?
Just what the doctor ordered.
Right here in the Motor City Madman.
Motor City Madhouse.
Yeah, so that's, it's awesome that the telephone was basically invented in Canada.
However, we'll get a little bit into the timeline of the telephone. And we can see how it developed over time. Because in 1667, Robert Hooke creates an acoustic string telephone that conveys sound over a taut extended wire by mechanical vibrations. And that's as early as 1667, so.
That's way early, yeah.
Yeah. And then 1844, Innocenzo Manzetti first suggests the idea of an electric speaking telegraph or telephone. And in 1849, Antonio Mucci demonstrates a communicating device to individuals in Havana, and it is disputed if this is an electromagnetic telephone, but is said to involve direct transmission of electricity into the user's body.
That's always fun. That conversation I had with that guy on the phone, that was electrifying.
Wow.
Yeah. Those Italians, they were... Italians and Germans, they were working on stuff just as much as people in North America. And there's always some kind of difference as to when things happen, like the airplane, when was that invented, the first automobile, radio with, what's his name, Marconi, and of course, this dude here, and Mucci, Mr. Mucci.
Well, and also in 1854, which was... about 5 years later, as far as Mucci goes, a couple things happen in between there, but he demonstrates an electric voice-operated device in New York, but it's not clear what kind of a device he demonstrated. So I guess we don't have the information on what that device was exactly, but we know that it happened, I guess. And then later on, again, other people, had some attempts here and there. Manzetti again as well, and then Mucci in 1865 reads of Manzetti's invention and writes to the editors of two newspapers claiming priority and quoting his first experiment in 1849. He writes, "I do not wish to deny Mr. Manzetti's invention. I only wish to observe that two thoughts could be found to contain the same discovery, and that by uniting the two ideas, one can more easily reach the certainty about a thing this important. If he reads Mucci's offer of collaboration, Manzetti does not respond." So,
I see.
So now they're feuding over who's developing the telephone. And of course, though, in what did we say was the 1876 was the development of the telephone, but in July of 1874, Alexander Graham Bell first conceives the theoretical concept for the telephone while vacationing at his parents' farm near Brantford. As we mentioned, Alexander Melville Bell records notes of his son's conversation in his personal journal. And we'll be back right after this.
Hey, this is Jody Raffoul, and you're listening to WDIR, Windsor Detroit Internet Radio, local, cross-border, and worldwide. And now, live at the Dive, the local dive, visit WDIR.net. Let's get straight.
You're not. And we are back. You're listening to Big JD and Lipo in the Morning on WDIR, Windsor Detroit Internet Radio, local, cross-border, and worldwide. And we're kind of stepping through the timeline of the telephone, and it goes on and on with so many different people and patents and all these different things. Then we're at 1876 to 1878 with a lot of different things going on, including Thomas Edison, 1876, files first patent application for acoustic telegraphy.
So that was the first telegraph.
Yeah, for which a U.S. patent 182996 was granted October 10th, 1876. And then 1876, Alexander Graham Bell makes the world's first long-distance telephone call about 6 miles between Brantford and Paris, Canada, Ontario.
That's a good distance. And on October 9th of 1876, Mr. Bell and Thomas Watson, which is associate, they had a telephone conversation between Cambridge and Boston. Mm-hmm. And then in 1915, there was a conversation between New York and San Francisco, which was a 3,400-mile wire between those two cities.
Jumps right ahead to 1915. Holy smokes.
Sorry. Yeah, because I know that the New York to Chicago thing was 1892.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So they're laying wire. And that's the funny thing about telephone. What?
Try and keep it clean.
I didn't say laying pipe. I said laying wire.
Oh, okay.
David Wilcox. You know that tune? Laying pipe all night long.
David Wilcox, Canadian?
Yes, he is.
Yeah.
He was born in Brantford.
Everybody was born in Brantford.
No, he wasn't. I'm
except
kidding.
Except you. Where were you born, actually? Right in Detroit or no?
Mount Clemens.
Mount Clemens, okay.
Mount Clemens, Michigan.
Wow.
Just a suburb just outside.
So when your band announces you, hey, for all the way from Mount Clemens, Michigan.
No, they say Woodsley.
Alrighty.
Woodsley, Ontario. What was I going to say about the wire thing? Yeah, so telephones, it's kind of interesting that telephones that are in people's homes today, wired telephones as we would call them, as opposed to cell phones and smartphones, those are based on the exact same technology that Mr. Bell started all that time ago. It's an actual wire. Your vibrations that you make on the diaphragm of your telephone get transferred into an electrical pulse that runs down a wire out of your house, down a line somewhere, into some switching station, and then down and out a wire and into some other phone. It's kind of crazy how if you think about it, since we've gone so far as wireless technology goes, you know what I mean? It's interesting that is still the way most people talk to each other now is on a phone. I mean, when I say most people in the developed world, like, you know, there's a lot of people who don't even own cell phones, and phoning somebody with an actual wired phone is the main method of communication these days. And actually the name of that system that's in place with the wires is called POTS. Are you familiar with POTS?
Yeah, I just washed a couple out.
Just, yeah, really? I just cooked some dinner in some pots. Or you planted a plant in some pots. Or you smoked some pot. But the pots that we're talking about with the phone line is a plain old telephone system. That's how simplistic does it get? Pots.
It doesn't get more simpler than that. And we're going to take a quick one and be back on the other side. You're listening to WDIR, Windsor Detroit Internet Radio, local, cross-border, and
worldwide! time.
This is Freewheeling from Psycho. You're listening to WDIR, Windsor Detroit Internet Radio, local, cross-border, and worldwide. Broadcasting live at the Dive, the local Dive, located in McKinney Plaza at 13169 Tecumseh Road East in Tecumseh.
Four on the Floor is a local Windsor, Ontario music documentary film. The basis of the film is music as a universal language, whereby the local Windsor music scene is showcased through the past decades. If you would like to submit live video footage or music for inclusion in the film, visit four onthefloor.ca. Are you looking for a new dentist? Dr. Letty is always accepting new patients. Call her at 519-948-0101 or stop in at 2825 Lauzon Parkway. Do what you always wanted to do. Smile with confidence. Call Dr. Letty.
I Do Wedding Videography, making wedding videography affordable for all couples. Visit idoweddingvideography.ca. No wedding video of your special day? That's simply not an option.
If you're not in the shape that you want to be in, you need to call Life and Body. Call President Reno Perlin of Life and Body. Reno's a certified personal fitness trainer. Whether you want to lose weight or gain weight, call 519-250-LIFE. Life and Body. What's your life and body worth?
Local, cross-border, and worldwide, and now live at the local Dive. It's the home of Dive Radio, and it's WDIR, Windsor Detroit Internet Radio, online at WDIR.net.
You're listening to Big JD and Lippo in the morning.
And here we are back at the midway point on Big JD and Lippo in the morning, WDIR, Windsor Detroit Internet Radio, local, cross-border, and worldwide. Want to jump ahead to the 2000s. There we go, fast forward through time. And what I wanted to say about that was the fact that we had talked about Antonio Meucci. But in June of 2002, he is recognized for his work in the invention of the telephone, but not for inventing the telephone, by the United States House of Representatives. And as well, about 10 days later, June 2002, the Parliament of Canada responds by passing a motion unanimously, 10 days later, recognizing Alexander Graham Bell as the inventor of the telephone. So that's how that...
Wow.
Transpired.
How timely.
What's that?
How timely is that?
Yeah.
That's crazy. It's dumb.
Well, it's like Canada wanted to make sure that, hey, we're going to pass this motion unanimously that it was a Canadian guy that did it. But, well, he's not necessarily Canadian, but he was here, you know what I mean, and developed it here.
Do you think he got his citizenship?
That I don't know. We'd have to consult Wikipedia for that.
Ask the Google.
Ask the Google. I pick things up and put them down. You ever see that commercial?
No.
A big workout guy. I'm not sure if he's Austrian or German or what, but he's got a strong accent, and that's what he keeps saying through the video in the gym. I pick things up and put them down. And a guy's showing him through the gym and leads him right to the back door and shoves him out. It's pretty funny, actually. I don't remember what it was for, though. I'm looking at a picture of Innocenzo Manzetti, and he looks angry, and he's got his arms crossed.
He's pissed because he didn't get credit for inventing the phone. Yeah. No, he didn't. He's not the guy, though.
Well, no, but he wishes he was.
I guess so do I.
You wish you were the inventor of the telephone?
I'd like to have some kind of claim to fame.
Well, you're going to have to claim your fame elsewhere, I think.
I think I'm a little too old to be claiming fame.
And, yeah, well, you'll have to figure that out for yourself. And telephones through the ages were pretty neat and unique. So many different kinds and types and styles, and it's pretty amazing when if anybody gets a chance to go to do a search for telephone and go to or search the word telephone in Wikipedia, and you'll find pictures of phones all through the ages. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty neat. or I'm sure even what's always amazing is just do a Google search for the telephone and click on images, and you'll find hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of them, which is, but it's pretty cool to see all the different types of telephones, especially if you didn't have access to old phones, and we did. You know, I had a family that had very old telephones and, you know, those old wooden ones that hung on the wall and all kinds of stuff. And
sure, yeah.
They're pretty neat. Pretty neat to see, pretty neat to use, and really pretty neat to see the simplicity of them, you know, back in the day when now we're kind of used to digital phones. And we'll be back with Mike Talks Tech.
Hi, this is Mo Rotundi coming to you live down at WDIR.net, live from the dive down here in Tecumseh. We're going to have a little lunch. They got great food down here, so check it out always. WDIR rocks! This is Mo Rotundi from Destroyer, the ultimate Kiss tribute. Walks by moonlight.
Hi there, everybody. This is Mike LaPlante, and you're listening to Mike Talks Tech. This week, we're going to be talking a bit about battery technology and how it relates to cell phones, smartphones, and other devices, other mobile devices, tablets in particular. Back at the beginning of cell phone introduction, the batteries that were in these devices were typically large dry cell batteries that was, if you wanted to replace them, you'd have to take them back to the place where you bought them, and you would have to get it reinstalled. A big operation, needless to say. However, once cell phones were relatively commonplace, cell phone batteries were more commonly user installable, and in most cases you could replace the battery in your cell phone easily. I remember my first cell phone was a bag device, and there was no battery involved at all. There was a power transformer though, so you could only use it in your car. It had a car charger, and the phone bits were in a bag with the power transformer, and you would plug that into your lighter, and so the battery in your car, in essence, was, you know, the battery for your phone, really. So, as far as cell phone technology and battery technology goes, it was not until cell phones were really mainstream. When I say mainstream, like you knew a lot of people who owned them, and they were ubiquitous around. In North America, at least. And most of those phones had a back piece that came off your phone, and then you could replace the battery that way. Some phones, actually, the back piece was the battery. So you just unclipped it and you brought it to your carrier. Your carrier was always the place where you picked up these pieces, and you replaced it that way. And it's interesting now that people replace their whole device now before they'd ever consider changing their battery. Now, is this a direct cause or a direct effect of the cause that Apple was one of the first companies to come out with a cell phone, and it was the first smartphone, and they did not allow you to change the battery in the phone. There was no user changeable things you could do on it other than put your SIM card in it. And a lot of companies went that route, that you don't touch the battery in your device, because they realize that the carriers and the cell phone manufacturers realize that most people will upgrade their phone within the period of time that their cell phone battery dies. That's how good battery technology has gotten now, that within 2 or 3 years, here in Canada, most contracts are 3 years, but in the United States, where a large portion of cell phones are sold. Contracts are up in 2 years, and most people can upgrade their phone to a new phone every 2 years. And the batteries that they put in these devices are usually relatively functionable after 2 years, and they're handed down. And, you know, if you want to change your battery, you can do so. You know, you can just go to some local cell phone repair shop. Those have always also sprung up as of late, as more and more people have smartphones in their possession. And as if you listen to Big JD and Lippo in the morning, you'll know that 87% of the population of Earth has a cell phone. At least that's how many cell phones there are out there. Whatever that number was, 6 billion, I think it was the number. You know, obviously not every, you know, not 87% of the population has a cell phone, but that's how many cell phones there are. If each person had one cell phone, you know, there, I know there's people who have more than one cell phone, especially people who work in companies where the company will give you a cell phone and you buy your own cell phone as well. Just like computers, cell phones are a large chunk of those sold are sold to companies and enterprise type sales. Having said that about Apple and the introduction of non-user changeable batteries, there are still companies out there such as Samsung that make phones that you can change the battery yourself, including one of the most popular smartphones out there, the Samsung Galaxy S3. It has a removable back, and you can go in there and change the battery. And there's also other things you can do. You can, you know, that's how you get to your SIM card. And there's also upgradable storage as well in the back of the Galaxy S3.
Please hang up and try again.
Inductive charging, which is also known as wireless charging, is a method by people by which people can charge their cell phone and other devices without actually plugging them into anything directly, into the actual power source. And this is known as, like I said, inductive charging. And basically what that does is uses, there's a coil within the charging pad or tabletop or whatever the, you know, the source is. And there's also a corresponding coil within the device that is being charged. Inductive charging uses an electromagnetic field to transfer energy between two objects. This is usually done with a charging station. Energy is sent through an inductive coupling to an electrical device, which can then use that energy to charge batteries to run the device. Induction chargers typically use an induction coil, like I said, to create an alternating electromagnetic. To create an alternating electromagnetic field from within a charging base station, and a second induction coil in the portable device takes the power from the electromagnetic field and converts it back into electrical current to charge the batteries. These two induction coils in proximity combine to form an electrical transformer. Greater distances between sender and receiver coils can be achieved when the inductive charging system uses something called a resonant inductive coupling. That's just a little too technical for our audience, I think. It sure is too technical for me, that's for sure. Some of the advantages of wireless charging includes lower risk of electrical shock or shorting out when wet because there are no exposed conductors. For example, toothbrushes, shavers, and outdoors. I know I have an electric toothbrush, and I know a lot of other people do as well. And that uses inductive charging. You know, you just put your toothbrush in the charger, and it charges up. There's no, you know, there's no connectors or no metal parts showing or anything like that. It just uses these coils. Another advantage is protected connections no corrosion when the electronics are all enclosed away from water or oxygen in the atmosphere. It's also safer for medical implants. For embedded medical devices, allows charging, powering through the skin rather than having wires penetrate the skin, which, of course, can increase the risk of infection. And, of course, there's the convenience factor, which is, the, you know, that's the main selling thing. Rather than having to connect an actual power cable, the device can be placed on or close to a charge plate or a stand. Wireless charging also has its disadvantages. There's a lower efficiency. It wastes heat. The main disadvantage of inductive charging are its lower efficiencies and increased resistive heating in comparison to a direct contact. Implementations using lower frequencies or older drive technologies charge more slowly and generate heat within most portable devices. It's also more costly. Inductive charging also requires drive electronics and coils in both device and charger, increasing the complexity and the cost of manufacturing. Slower charging, due to the lower efficiency, devices take longer to charge when supplied power is equal. It's inconvenient as well as convenient. I don't know. When a mobile device is connected to a cable, it can be freely moved around and operated while charging. I know when I charge my phone next to my bed, of course, I can still use it. In some implementations of wireless charging, the mobile device must be left on the pad and thus can't be moved around or easily operated while it's charging. So, you know, while you're charging using a wireless charger, your phone's out of use, basically. There's also incompatibility issues as well. Unlike a standardized micro USB charging connector, there are no de facto standards for inductive or wireless charging, potentially leaving a consumer, an organization, or a manufacturer with redundant equipment when standards emerge. Newer approaches reduce transfer losses through the use of ultra-thin coils, higher frequencies, optimized drive technologies or electronics, and this results in more efficient and compact chargers and receivers, facilitating and integration into mobile devices with minimal changes required. The inventor of wireless energy transfer was Nikola Tesla. That guy was a brainchild, and I think I've already mentioned him on the show already, but this guy had the idea of everything could be charged or be supplied with electricity wirelessly and harmlessly to humans, not affecting humans, but actually charging up all our stuff. And the resources that it requires for that to happen are readily available in our on Earth, and it's amazing that that never panned out. As far as, you know, where we could be nowadays, as far as electricity goes, the idea of having to pay electricity would seem silly. It would like be paying for the air we breathe or paying for the sunlight. You know, that's how much. How far we could have gone with wireless charging or wireless powering of all our devices, not necessarily just batteries. One device I wanted to talk about that I just learned about that's happening at the World Mobile Congress, I believe that's in Germany or France, I'm not sure, but it's in Europe, and it's a solution by Duracell, obviously one of the most popular battery companies out there, and they make a case that you can put your iPhone 5 in. I believe it's the iPhone 5. Yes, it is. You put your iPhone 5 in this case, and then you put the case on the pad, and then your phone charges in that way. They've outfitted Madison Square Garden with 600 of these pads, and if you have one of the Duracell cases on your phone, you just walk up to one of these pads, put your phone on it, and it charges up. I believe they also have these pads in 17 Starbucks in the city of Boston, so that's another way that you're going to be able to charge your phone. That would be nice, to have free charging of your phone anywhere. That's not too out of the realm of possibility. But you can check that out at Duracell.com or check out all the happenings at the World Mobile Congress at their website. It looks like that's all the time we're going to have for this week. Thanks a lot, everybody, for listening. And we'll talk to you again next week on Mike Talks Tech.
Result Makers is an elite recruiting and consulting team connecting professionals to the top performing businesses. Located in Troy, Michigan, call 248-251-0143 or visit resultmakers.net. That's resultmakers.net.
Scentsy is your safe, wickless alternative to scented candles. Call independent Scentsy director Kathy Kasborowitz at 519-733-6199 or check out the Scentsy banner ad at WDIR.net for Kathy's website. Wickless scented candles. Scentsy makes perfect sense.
Shantoon.com is ready to take on your next 2D animation project. Sean Watkins is a professional Flash animator and graphic artist. Check out his work online at Shantoon.com, Shontoon.com.
If you're in need of professional video and film production or audio production, check out OMS Entertainment. Corporate, commercial, training, broadcast, podcast, real estate, or wedding. Located in Windsor, Ontario, visit OMSEntertainment.com.
WDIR, Windsor Detroit Internet Radio, local, cross-border, and worldwide. And now, live at the Dive. That's right, the local dive in Tecumseh. WDIR, broadcasting live at the Dive. Check out WDIR.net.
All right, this week we're talking about telephones on the Big JD and Lipo in the Morning show. We are on WDIR, local, cross-border, and worldwide. Where do you want to pick it up? When was the beginning of cell phone technology, the bricks that people used to hold up to their head?
Wow, yeah, cellular phone. I remember when and they were very expensive.
Oh, you couldn't afford the first ones. They were like thousands.
My dad and somebody that he worked with both went in together on a phone and shared it. And it was one of those big ones that it had some kind of another case with it that you had to carry around with it. You know what I mean? And the headset was like kind of separate from it. I mean, but corded.
Yes.
And you'd plug it into the lighter in the car or whatever. And anyway, a mobile phone, also known as a cellular phone, cell phone, or even hand phone, a device that can make and receive telephone calls over a radio link while moving around a wide geographic area. And it does so by connecting to a cellular network provided by a mobile phone operator, allowing access to the public telephone network. And by contrast, a cordless phone is used only within the short range of a single private base station, which, like in your home, that we sometimes refer to that as wireless, but more, more properly, a cordless phone.
Exactly. Yes, two different types of things.
Right.
But what was your first cell phone?
My first cell phone was probably some kind of a big Nokia.
A Nokia.
Yeah, I think so.
It's interesting that the first the world's first commercial automated cellular network was launched by NTT, which is in Japan. Mm-hmm. And in 1981, it was followed by the launch of the NMT, which is the Nordic Mobile Telephone System, in Denmark, Finland, Norway, and Sweden. And of course, that's where Nokia is from. It's from Finland. Mm-hmm. And right now, they're known as, you know, one of the top seller of cell phones in the world. Not necessarily the top seller of smartphones, that's for sure. Because the Nokia they're pretty much tied to the Windows phone system as far as their smartphone offerings go, aren't they?
I don't know, but I was glad to get rid of it.
Were you? Yeah.
And move on to something else, yeah. But getting back to your question of the earliest days of the mobile phone, the first handheld mobile phone was demonstrated by John F. Mitchell and Dr. Martin Cooper of Motorola in 1973 using a handset weighing around 2.2 pounds. In 1983, the Dynatac 8000X was the first to be commercially available. From 1990 to 2011, worldwide mobile phone subscriptions grew from 12.4 million to over 6 billion, penetrating about 87% of the global population and reaching the bottom of the economic pyramid.
6 billion?
Mm-hmm.
Well, how many people are on Earth?
I don't know. How many are?
I want to say it's less than 8 billion, isn't it?
Well, 87% of the global population. That's pretty darn close then to your numbers.
But how many of those people are kids?
Hey, every kid has a cell phone.
Wow. Like, I'm serious. Like, you know, there's a large portion of the population are kids, are they not? I wonder what that number is. And we're covering 87% of the population?
Well, it also says here that in 2012, for the first time since 2009, mobile phone sales to end users is declining by 1.7% to 1.75 billion units, which is dominated by Samsung for 385 million units and Apple for 130 million units of all smartphones. And we'll be back after this.
Hey, this is Jeff Burrows from the Tea Party and Crash Karma. You're listening to WDIR, melting your face as you listen to amazing radio.
And now it's time for Quotes and Quips.
And we're back. This is Big JD and Lipo in the Morning on WDIR, Windsor Detroit Internet Radio, local, cross-border, and worldwide. And this quote comes to us this morning from the one and only Joan Rivers.
She's a funny chick.
Yeah, and this is
kind of funny. She's still alive, right?
Yeah.
She may look dead, but she's still alive, right?
She doesn't look too bad for her age. Obviously had a lot of work done to look
like. Lots of work. I mean,
she doesn't look much older than her, from a distance anyway, than her daughter.
No, she doesn't.
She says, Elizabeth Taylor has more chins than the Chinese telephone directory.
Now, Elizabeth Taylor is no longer with us.
She isn't, no.
No. So it's not nice to talk about dead people like that, Joan.
Well, it's not, but tell that to Joan. That's today's quote on Quotes and Quips on Big JD and Lipo in the Morning.
That's a quip.
Is it a quip? It's a quip.
Quip or a joke?
Well, yeah, it's a joke. Definitely a joke.
And that's what she is. She's a comic.
And we were last talking about the cellular phones.
Mm-hmm.
And along with the cellular phones come the features of the cellular phone and those new technologies such as text messaging is one. The most commonly used data application on mobile phones is SMS text messaging. The first SMS text message was sent from a computer to a mobile phone in 1992 in the UK, while the first person-to-person SMS from phone-to-phone was sent in Finland in 1993.
And what did it say?
That, I don't know. The first mobile news service delivered via SMS was launched in Finland in 2000. What's with Finland and all this modern technology?
Nokia.
Well, yeah. That's pretty amazing.
They're huge. Huge.
The SIM card. GMS feature phones require a small microchip called a subscriber identity module or SIM card to function. SIM card is approximately the size of a small postage stamp, and of course, SIM cards have gotten even smaller than that now.
We have the nano SIMs.
Yeah.
There's regular SIMs, micro
SIMs. Can't even
see
them. They're invisible to the naked
eye. No, they're not invisible, but of course, Apple had everything to do with the nano SIM. They were a big pusher of the standard for nano SIMs.
Apple's a pusher.
They are a pusher. And by the way, the first text was Merry Christmas.
Was it?
Yeah.
Wow. And was it around Christmas time?
December 3rd.
Okay. The first SIM card was made in 1991 by Munich.
Smart Alexander Grand Sim?
No. Munich smart card maker Gisek and Devrient.
Okay.
For the Finnish wireless network operator Radiolinja.
That's where all those Nokia phones were running on that wireless network. Yep.
All right. Well, we're out of time. We got to go answer our phones.
Thanks a lot for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you again next week.
See ya.
We hope you have a great day and be sure to join us here next week, same time, same place, for Big JD and Lipo in the Morning.
Four on the
Floor is a local Windsor, Ontario music documentary film. The basis of the film is music as a universal language, whereby the local Windsor music scene is showcased through the past decades. If you would like to submit live video footage or music for inclusion in the film, visit four, the number four, on the floor.ca. Are you looking for a new dentist? Dr. Letty is always accepting new patients. Call her at 519-948-0101 or stop in at 2825 Lauzon Parkway. Do what you always wanted to do. Smile with confidence. Call Dr. Letty. I Do Wedding Videography, making wedding videography affordable for all couples. Visit iDoWeddingVideography.ca. No wedding video of your special day? That's simply not an option. If you're not in the shape that you want to be in, you need to call Life and Body. Call President Reno Perlin of Life and Body. Reno's a certified personal fitness trainer. Whether you want to lose weight or gain weight, call 519-250-LIFE. Life and Body. What's your life and body worth?
Local, cross-border, and worldwide, and now live at the Local Dive. It's the home of Dive Radio, and it's WDIR, Windsor, Detroit Internet Radio, online at WDIR.net.